here with another episode of Spooky Skeptics. I have got Tanya with me. Say hi, Tanya.
Hi, Tanya.
And I have one super duper special guest host tonight, one Mr. Todd Purse. Say hi, Todd.
Hello.
I'd like to thank you for being on tonight, Todd. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, what you do, that kind of thing?
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm stoked to be here. I am a cartoonist and illustrator by trade, I suppose, and I have a podcast where I talk about the stuff that I make and a bunch of weird stuff and interview different creatives and people that work in the, or I guess work, that's a funny word, people that exist in the world of the paranormal.
Awesome, awesome.
And he did the new artwork for these episodes, for the segment, our new spooky skeptics
cover art was done by Todd,
and it's amazing,
flipping amazing.
Oh, thank you so much. That was so much fun. I was so stoked when you asked me to do that. I'm glad.
I love what you did with our little guys. So the Bigfoot's name is Jorge, spelled just don't even ask how that conversation happened. The alien is Probert, P-R-O-B-E-R-T. Yeah, Probert. And the cat is Gerald.
Yes.
We named them all like when we very first started, and then all of us kind of forgot the names.
so we had to remind ourselves again.
I always remember
Gerald because he's the cat. Everybody loves him. When Laura and I went to Van Meter, we had shirts with the Bigfoot with Jorge, and we didn't have any of Probert, but we had the cat and the Bigfoot. Everybody wanted the cat. Everything we sold, I don't think anybody bought the Bigfoot. Everybody wanted the cat.
Aww. Cats are like the secret sauce.
They are, and especially ghosty cats. I mean, come on.
it's the best of both worlds. I'd say that when I saw that y'all's cover had those three characters, I was like, oh yeah, I can definitely do this. That's what I draw all the time. Like cats are probably like the first thing that I started really diving into when cartooning, even as a kid. I just loved drawing cats. I don't know what, I grew up on Calvin and Hobbes, so it was probably that.
There you go.
I love Calvin and Hobbes. I do too.
It's my favorite.
Alrighty, folks. So tonight's episode, we are doing one of my personal favorite topics, the Bell Witch and Jeff. It's super exciting how we're going to tie them in. So let's get started. Tanya, why don't you give us a little synopsis on the Bell Witch and what she's about?
Okay. All right. Well, everybody knows, well, I guess everybody knows about the Bell Witch. She is in, or was in, Adams, Tennessee, which is not, probably like maybe 40 miles from me. Okay, so I'll read what they say about the Bell Witch, just straight out, and then we'll talk about some of the other stuff I found, I guess. The Bell Witch haunting is a traditional American folklore legend from Tennessee. As story goes, the mysterious spirit tormented and haunted the Bell family and surrounding area between 1817 and 1821. The story has become one of the most infamous hauntings in America and has been retold in various books and movies. And what it was, it revolves around John Bell Sr. and his daughter Betsy and her betrothed Joshua Gardiner. It seems like they all came from North Carolina together. They all came to Tennessee to kind of settle that area because it's up towards Kentucky. And she, for some reason, did not like the dad. She did not like him. She said that he had wronged her in some way and that she was going to get back at him. She also at first liked the girl, and then she started being mean to her, and she really did not seem to want Betsy and her boyfriend together for one reason or the other. I don't think anybody ever said anything about that, but she started appearing, or they started seeing stuff like strange rabbits, dogs, stuff like that. He was out in the barn and saw a rabbit, kind of a, he said it was like, looked like a dog and a rabbit mixed together, and it was sitting there staring at him.
And he shot
and he shot at it, and it ran away. but they kept seeing these animals. They saw a chicken one day and it, you know, it ran off. And so then when that didn't get attention.
Okay, but did they have neighbors? Like, could it have been a neighbor's chicken? Let's be real.
Hey, now the chicken, yes, I'm sure it could have. Yeah, I don't know about the dog.
I'm like, in this story, but I mean,
the chicken could have been. I mean, like Roman chickens doesn't seem like it had been that big of a deal back then.
Yeah,
because you know, yeah, they don't have big. They don't have big fences on their yards or anything. So I would say, when I see
a chicken, I don't instantly go paranormal. Is my whole point.
Right, that's true.
All that I'm saying.
That's true. Now the dog rabbit might be kind of paranormal. Yeah, because some people now you know how stories get over just get done like a fish tail, bigger and bigger fish. The more it goes through, till it was like a solid black dog rabbit with glowing red eyes, and it wasn't that to begin with. there was also a story that said that.
Todd, Kate, I need you to draw me a drabbit.
Done.
Yes, because you draw a drabbit.
Coming right up.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. Okay, carry on, Tanya.
No, I love it.
I was trying to imagine what part, because this is where my brain goes. I'm trying to imagine, well, what parts of the rabbit did it have? Did it have like the weird back
legs?
Well,
it said the rabbit
head. A fluffy
head.
Bunny tail.
Oh, that's way worse. Like a dog body and a rabbit head?
Rabbit's head, yeah.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Yes, oh, that's frightening.
Awful.
Yeah.
I know. Well, I don't think a bunny with a dog head would be all that great.
No, that's also true. At least smaller, you know, the size.
Yes. Or a giant rabbit with a dog head. That wouldn't be good.
Yeah. But, okay, carry on. I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's okay. No, it's fine. They said that one of the things, which this was, there was so much stuff that just got added to the story over time. One of the things was that there was a transaction of land, and Kate said that he cheated her on the land. And it said allegedly on her deathbed, she vowed to haunt him. Well, that's not true because they said that the bats, Kate and her husband, were very poor and they owned very little land. And she also died several years after him. So okay, that yeah, part so that wasn't was true at all. Later. Yeah, that was made up later. I read a thing that said that, you know, everybody blamed her for his death. And, this was actually in the Nashville paper several years ago. I found it online, but it was a doctor, and she said that he probably died of arsenic over time because of his job and such as that, that his symptoms seemed like they were arsenic poison.
Does arsenic cause hallucinations?
Now that I don't know.
Me either.
I don't.
No clue.
Let me look and see. I have something from that. Hold on. I keep getting confused because I posted that big scary looking Jeff. What one Jeff? But it's a mongoose on the wrong page. And now it's every time I see that, but it's on the Bellwitch, on my Bellwitch notes.
Again, so her, serial killer notes.
Yeah, see, that's what mine is serial killer notes. But the doctor was, I didn't save all the article, just bits and pieces of it. So her last name was Mann, and she believed that John Bell was a victim of long-term arsenic poisoning. She believed he received small doses of the poisoning over the course of about 3 years after his symptoms first appeared, and a large fatal dose on the night before he died. Now, she didn't say, huh?
So somebody offed him?
Yeah. And, you know, they'd always blame the Bell Witch, but
yeah,
maybe.
The Bell Witch, yeah.
Yeah.
That seems mighty convenient.
Yeah, it does, don't it?
Done.
But it might have been somebody else, some human person. But I did see a movie, and this was a weird take on it. And the movie kind of pissed me off because, you know, Tennessee doesn't have a lot of legends, and so she's pretty much like the biggest legend Tennessee has. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys seen the movie. It was Gosh, about 10 years or more ago, probably more than 10 years ago, that it's a Hollywood movie, and I think it's called An American Haunting, and they portray him as maybe being abusive, both physically and sexually, to his daughter. Now,
Wow.
I had never heard that, so I don't know if that was, and we got the movie from there's a school down in Adams where they put on a play every month, I think, or something, about her life, and that's where this VHS tape was. So I don't know if they just had it there because it was a Bell Witch movie and it was a Hollywood movie or what, but yeah, they portrayed him as that. So if he was that, she might have been doing it all along, or maybe the mom or something, but I've never read anything else about that. It was just from that movie. I really don't see a ghost, a witch, well, maybe a witch, but I she me and Trina were talking, she doesn't show anything of being a witch. I mean, she would be either a ghost or a fae, I think, but I think it would be more a person that had been poisoning him for quite a while, and that was just an easy thing to say, was that this ghost person killed him because she was evil, she was from hell.
Hold
So
on, I'm looking up this hallucination thing right now.
okay.
Google understands my typo language.
While you're looking at that, I can tell something about Kate. And I've seen her name spelled different ways. I've seen it spelled Kate and Cate, and I don't know which one it is. It's in all different articles. She was the wife of Frederick Batts and was believed by many to have been the culprit behind the disturbances. Although not a poor woman, she was often mocked by others throughout the Red River settlement in Robertson County. For her improper use of words, along with her sometimes strange ways, and it led them to think that's why she was a witch when she was alive. Now, it says that Benjamin Batts, the brother of Frederick, which would have been her brother-in-law, had a dispute with John Bell over the sale of a slave. And that's why there was a quarrel between them, was because of that. So see, there's so many different stories. I could just keep looking and looking and looking and find different stories.
Right. So what did this entity do to the family? Like, what are the actual claims? Like,
Well, first off, she started appearing like the dog,
right.
the rabbit dog and the
The
chickens and
rabbit.
stuff. But when that didn't work, then she started
Then she
knocking on the
got,
walls. She got a
okay.
little more, yeah, she wanted attention. She wasn't getting enough attention doing that because anybody with sense, like you said, could have been a neighbor's chicken. You could have
Right.
hallucinated a dog because nobody saw it but him, the rabbit dog. But she wasn't getting enough attention. So then she started knocking on walls, scratching on bedpost. They said it sounded like rats gnawing on the bedpost. It would sound like dogs outside fighting, but when they would look, there'd be no dogs fighting. They also said that you could hear chains being dragged across the floor. She pulled Betsy's hair all the time. She pinched Betsy. She would get mad when the boyfriend was there.
Okay.
Yeah. She just did a lot of annoying
So she
mischief
was
stuff.
physically, but not any lasting type harm stuff.
No, other than them blaming her for the death of John,
And
which.
that in general is kind of rare, like, right? Like, you don't really see too many, whether you want to look at it as a ghost, witch, poltergeist, or anything that's got a body count, even if it's not like, even if it was just attributed afterwards, you don't hear that too often.
No, it's very rare that any kind of discarnate entity actually harms a human rather than mental harm or soul sucking or energy feeding. They feed on our energy. Okay, so they would have to really be really strong, really powerful, and really probably not even interested in humans if they're that strong and powerful to suck you dry. The physical harm, like the pinching and stuff, that happens, but sometimes that can be psychosomatic. And that's your fear of what you're, I'm not saying that the entity is not there, but there, I have whole theories on that. I don't even want to get into it right at
but
the second.
But no, you're right. Because,
well, we're going to go into a whole other episode, but as somebody who deals with the paranormal, I'm going to say this, that's really, any kind of harm is actually very, very, very rare. And when it does happen, that's when it gets sensationalized.
Right.
Yeah.
Physical harm, corporeal harm. I'm not talking about what, they can fuck with your brains for sure.
Right.
But, but physical, actual physical harm, very rare. Because when it does happen, it's so sensationalized that that's what our brains think. So when you do run into an entity and you feel that shot of primal fear, that's what your brain thinks automatically is going to happen to you. Well, as I've said on many episodes, it's usually just your Uncle Ted trying to tell you where he left the keys to the Buick. So, I mean, but you're still going to feel that fear because what you're feeling is something other. Mm-hmm. It's not normal. It's not within our realm of reality. So you still feel that, holy fuck, what's that?
Right.
You know, even me knowing what it is, I still feel it. The difference is I know how to control it and it goes away immediately for me because I'm just as sarcastic with dealing with spirit as I am in dealing with humans. You're not, I don't, you know, I am what I am. So
no, the fear, it's like when you feel pain in your body, the pain is meant to communicate something. The fear is meant to communicate that, like, you know, there's something here you should check out.
Right,
or look
you
deeper
should check
into.
Out. Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Just like the hairs on the back of your neck. Everybody has that inner sense. Everybody has that primal brain. Listen to that shit, because when that shit happens, there's a reason.
Absolutely.
You know?
No, I completely agree.
All right, Tanya.
I was looking at more of the stuff. They said also that other people besides him saw a big black dog. Apparently they had slaves, which was common in the time. And
slave culture had a lot of big black dog stories, so demon dogs.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah. And this one was apparently the slave said that they were harassed as well by her, and I don't know if somebody was just jumping on the bandwagon later, but there was one particular his name was not here, so I apologize for that, but he said that you would see and hear a big black dog at night coming to bother them, and they were calling her or the dog spirit of the damned. Let's see what else. Her son, well, not her son, but John's son, John Jr., had long conversations with the witch. So she never bothered him. And Lucy, which is the wife, the Bell Witch Kate seemed to like her. And she would be very take care of her type thing. You know how like your pen a while ago, how your pen showed up. Stuff like
that's
that.
My grandma.
Good stuff like that would happen to Lucy and John Jr. They were both left basically just unharmed. And Lucy was proclaimed by the spirit to be the most perfect woman living. And she showed a great deal of compassion towards her, even caring for her and singing to her while she was ill. And John Jr. had the long conversations with the witch, but he never failed to show his animosity, declaring her to be, okay, he said this, the spirit of the damned when he was around people. I guess, you know, he didn't want people to think he was all okay with this situation. But also, you know, have y'all heard about Andrew Jackson wanting to talk to her?
No.
The president?
No.
Yeah.
Do tell.
Yeah,
no, fish the hot guys.
I had heard this also. That he had heard about this, and you know, he lived in Nashville, well, Old Hickory. There's a town here called Old Hickory because of him. He had heard about her and wanted to talk, you know, to her. And so he brought a bunch of people, and there was a witch hunter, a supposed witch hunter from town who came with them. And she told Andrew Jackson, this is what he said, she told Andrew Jackson that she was going to get the best of this witch hunter. And he told her he wished she would. And so that night, supposedly she was quoting Bible verses to this witch hunter guy, and I can find the exact guy's name and all that stuff. But I've heard this several times, so it's not just something that just got pulled up. Some person said, right, you know, but I have heard it several times that Andrew Jackson was actually kind of amused by all of this. So I don't know. I know some of the presidents, like Lincoln, believed in spirits. And so sure. I think, yeah. And
so did his wife.
Yeah, big time she did. Yeah, and she I think Andrew Jackson did as well. So yeah, he had experiences with her, and she wasn't hateful to him or anything. She was hateful to the witch hunter and was quoting Bible verses, yelling Bible verses at him and stuff like that.
Right.
But yeah, that's pretty much what I got. Yeah, they blamed her for everything. And then
so she was not a pleasant entity except to the wife.
His
who
wife
may or may not have been slowly poisoning her husband over the course of a couple of years.
Exactly. So maybe that's why she wasn't bothered, or her son wasn't bothered as well, which that would kind of make sense considering some of the people thought that he was molesting his daughter. And so right. Her brother and her mom, of course, back then a woman just couldn't go somewhere and say, hey, my husband's doing this, y'all need to do something about it, because people that was your family and nobody paid attention. I mean, you know, nobody looked into your family kind of thing. So you know, maybe they were slowly poisoning him because he was not a nice person, and she was just a good excuse, maybe.
All right, because that, you know, I did look it up, and it says that arsenic can cause hallucinations, but at high levels. It has to be exposure to high levels.
Oh, so if he was being poisoned over time.
Like it might have made him loopier, but it wouldn't necessarily cause hallucinations, which was just something I was curious about with the sightings.
Yeah.
Alrighty, so that's the Bell Witch. So I'm gonna thank you, Tanya, so much for all of that.
You're welcome. Well, Todd, what did you have anything to say about the Bell Witch?
Well, so when, excuse me, sorry about that. For when the Bell Witch was communicating with the family or other people, was there like precognitive stuff, or like was there information, like what made them kind of think that this was? Because I know you mentioned the knocking and like the chattering and stuff, and but was there was some longer conversations that they had with the actual Bell Witch, right?
Right, yeah, like the son would have at length conversations and such. So
what
did
they talk about? Does it say anywhere?
It doesn't say what they talked about. No. But it said they had in-depth conversations, so I would like to know what they talked about.
Yeah, right? Like, that'd be super interesting for sure. It definitely has. I'm interested to hear the Jeff story and start seeing some of the similarities and comparisons between the two.
Yeah, there definitely is.
So Jeff is in, it takes place, this is later, so Bell Witch was pre-Jeff, actually.
Yeah, because she was in 1800s.
Yeah, and Jeff is a talking mongoose, who's in one of my very favorite cryptids out there, by the way. So in September of 1931, Jeff appeared to the Irving family. The Irving family consisted of James, the father, Margaret, the mom, and I looked this up and Googled it and listened to the pronunciation so I wouldn't mess it up, Vori, the daughter. It's spelled V-O-I-R-R-E-Y. So I was like,
that's a really weird name.
Yep. So it started in their house as noises before they ever even saw them, just noises that they said sounded like scratching in the walls or like a dog or a baby crying several times. But then he would start talking to him, and he seemed to target Vori the most, but he would say that he was a mongoose who was born in New Delhi, India in 1852. And anytime they asked him what he was, he would give him a different answer. One time he'd say, well, I'm just a clever, clever mongoose. Another time he said he was an earthbound spirit. Another time he said he was just a ghost in the form of a mongoose. Now, when he got mad, when they wouldn't listen to him and he wanted their attention, he would get a little more biblical with his who he was. At one point he said, "I am legion." A direct quote was, "I am a freak. I have hands and feet, and if you saw me, you'd faint. You'd be petrified and mummified, turned into a stone or a pillar of salt." So he got very, very bluffy and chest puffy with them. Okay, so here's the thing about Jeff. While they call it the haunting, it took place on the Isle of Man in Chasen's Gap. And another name of it, like in the tabloids and what, was the Dalby Spook, because it was the hamlet of Dalby. Mm-hmm. But the difference here is Jeff actually became a companion to the family.
Right.
Now, they would leave him bananas and biscuits and chocolate on a little like saucer suspended by ropes, because he would only come out to eat when he thought nobody was looking. But they saw him, they hid and they looked, and they described him as a small rat-like creature with a yellowish tinge to his fur and a big old bushy tail.
And he's the one told him he was a mongoose, right?
Yep. He told them he was a mongoose born. That was one of his things. He was a mongoose born in New Delhi in 1852.
So the one thing I'll insert there is I heard that there was, okay. So Jeff's one of my favorite cases, and I've consumed so much on it in a bunch of different ways, but I think this was in the astral plane, which talks about Jeff a lot. But there was actually a ghost hunter that was also a scientist that was brought in before Jeff identified himself as a mongoose. I can't remember exactly how it goes, but essentially this guy was the first person to say, "Yeah, it's a mongoose." And then ever since then, Jeff was like, "I'm a mongoose," which it always stuck out to me.
Oh, yeah. I didn't run across that. And I've read like you, he's one of my faves.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I'll be completely upfront. I could be misremembering it. I did not brush up too much for this episode, but that always stuck out to me because I love the idea that like these weird entities, be they fae or whatever they are, interact with what we kind of put out there. So somebody was like, "Mongoose," and he's like, "I'm a mongoose. I just always loved that little thing. And if I'm misremembering, I apologize, but regardless, I think both of these are really cool instances of how like everybody has their own interpretation of the event. Like everybody in the house is experiencing these events kind of differently. And like that stuff that always sticks out to me too. Like how personal that these anomalous events tend to be.
Well, he was real personable with the family and they loved him. They said he guarded the house, that he would chase the mice, but he wouldn't kill the mice. That was their one complaint because he liked to scare them rather than catch them. He would also like go to the market with them, but he would stay on the side of the bushes, and they said he talked incessantly and he loved to gossip about the neighbors. I did read several instances of that where he would be like, "Well, Mrs. So-and-so got new wallpaper and quite frankly, it's a little better than yours." And like, he would get super snark and like, you know, queer eye for the fae guy. I don't know, you know, like, so I love that he had this really different personality. Now he would get angry and he would, but mainly when people would disbelieve in him.
Yeah.
And they brought in 1935, they brought in the editor of a national tabloid, the Listener, called Richard S. Lambert. Apparently everybody called him Rex. So you can imagine what kind of bro he was. He brought along his friend, paranormal investigator, Harry Price, who actually kind of took it kind of serious. They did write a book. I think it's called The Haunting of Cashin's Gap. Cashin, I don't know what else. Anyways, but they tried to say that they were just being observers and reporting, what they observed and not biased in any way. They tried not to give their opinion either way, but so like Harry sent hair samples to a naturalist named F. Martin Duncan, who after his brief analysis said it was sheepdog hair, and they did own a sheepdog named Mona. I found a picture of her. She was super duper cute. Aww. Okay, now the paw prints, and I sent a picture of y'all these in the Insta thread. Yeah. I'm going to share them when we post this episode too. Those were sent to a Reginald Pocock. Have you ever heard a more British name in your freaking life, my doll? You at the Natural History Museum. Now, he said they were definitely not mongoose, but he couldn't identify what they were. One of them could have possibly have been a dog, but he had no idea.
They
basically
don't look like dog prints to me.
No.
I couldn't tell from the prints you sent over, but if I remember right, one of the things I always loved was that he was supposed to have like a thumb and three fingers, like Mickey Mouse hands almost. Like they're supposed to be like human hands, but missing a finger, which like just really leans into the kind of cartoon imagery of the whole thing that I love.
Right. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
On those prints, I know they also sent a tooth. And again, they said it wasn't anything they could identify, or a cast of the tooth. Mm-hmm. And I think like the one part of the pictures, if you look at them, that's the scratch marks that they had in their wall from him.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, that's awesome. What
a lot of the naysayers were saying was, as it turned out, their house had double walls. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you could basically talk, and I grew up in a house like this. Like I could talk through my little furnace vent in my bedroom down to my sister in the basement, be like,
oh wow,
yo, mom's home, hide the shit, you know, like I mean, and it would go all the way through the house. So that's a thing
totally
that could happen. But that's what these people were saying, that Bori was a ventriloquist and she was throwing her voices, and because people came into their house and heard him talk.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes when people were snarky, he got snarky back. And then that's when he's out, got went all biblical with the pillar of salt, I am legion, totally, kind of bullshit. And
I love that.
But he mainly, whenever they saw him, it was in mongoose form. And you know, that, or as close to, I see a squirrel, you know, by that, you know, when they, every written description I saw, like in my head, I see a big fat squirrel, you know. I do. And I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I guess a mongoose is kind of like a squirrel, only meaner. I don't know.
A mongoose looks like a weasel to me.
Yeah
They kill cobras.
Yeah, I just picture
Ricky. That's exactly what I was just going to say. Yeah. That's all I picture is that.
Now, and all of this continued the whole time they lived in the house up until 1945, when James passed of, you know, natural causes.
Yeah.
It took the ladies a year to sell the house. They sold it to a Leslie Graham, who then claimed that he shot and killed Jeff, and he had a body on display, but it was a big old body that was furry and black and white, looked nothing like any description.
Why would you shoot a talking mongoose is what I want.
Yeah,
know.
Come on,
if
now.
If you have a talking mongoose.
It did take them like a year to sell the house because nobody wanted to buy it because of the haunting and the, you know, because they did get tabloid press.
I would buy it.
And while they couldn't prove it, really, they also couldn't disprove it besides what their Bori was a ventriloquist. One guy, this Nandor guy, like Nandor Fordor, I don't know, he had a really Lord of the Rings kind of sounding name. He actually wrote a book too about it. But sorry, guy, I have no disrespect. His theory was that Jeff was a personality of James, the dad that had split off. So he had two personalities. And when it split off, he became Jeff, the talking mongoose guy. Not buying that either.
No, that's...
like I said, he actually, the Bori went to her grave saying she did not create him, that he was a companion to her family. They never did see him again. He didn't follow them. I know they've sent investigators in there now, but I don't trust anything that comes out now because of tech, and you know how I feel about it. And I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I would have to actually go there myself to actually prove to myself anything about the, you know, about this encounter. And that's just how I feel, because that's how I feel about tech and in general and video in general these days. And it's why I love free internet stories so much.
Right, you know? Exactly. I do want to know how a mongoose from New Delhi got to the Isle of Man, which is like in the middle of the ocean.
He gave several stories. Like he said he was lost at sea, that he rolled in on a shipwreck, that he just appeared. And then that's when he went into, he was an earthbound spirit. When the shipwreck, you know, they questioned his shipwreck story. And he never had details to back up anything he would say.
Right.
So then he would flip and give him something else. And again, it reminds me of the Bell Witch only in that the interaction, they're giving them what they want. And in this case, the difference is he's not mean unless he's mad at somebody. And even then, he's way more prankstery than evil and dark. You know,
exactly.
He'd rather play tricks or dish the hot gossip and cause, you know, he would like to tell who was cheating on who and, you know, that kind of thing. And can you imagine being Mrs. Irving and having all the hot dish when she went to town, you know, like that's some good times. He'd be my friend too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
there is one thing I saw about him that said that, let's see, Jeff explained he was an Indian marsh mongoose and that he had been born in June 7th, 1852 near Delhi and had lived with a tall man who wore a green turban. Frequently, Jeff would sing Indian folk songs and he spoke Hindi.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah,
you know what? I have the Hindi thing in my serial killer notes.
Oh, do you?
I just didn't see it.
That always kind of disproved the ventriloquism thing to me.
Right, because like, unless she spoke Hindi, which why would a girl in the, on the Isle of Man, who's what, 13 or 14?
In the 1930s, she was 30, 13.
Speak Hindi.
They were they were fairly poor. You know, they were making a very meager subsistence on the land. And they didn't make money off of people coming and investigating.
Totally. Right. And so I can't remember one of my favorite things. And actually, there might be a parallel between this and the Bell Witch, is that the family that was experiencing everything, they had a very successful business before they moved to the Isle of Man, and it went out of business, and they moved there with like the rest of their savings. So like that liminal place in life of like losing a business that was really successful and then moving to the middle of the ocean. And one of the things I remember reading or hearing on a podcast, when I say reading, I might mean reading, or I might mean I heard it on a podcast at this point.
Who knows where they come from? They're just there. I get it.
But I remember there being a point where the locals of the Isle of Man used to like look down upon them because they used highfalutin tongue. They would talk fancy compared to the rest of the people on the Isle of Man. So they stuck out a lot.
Oh.
And I believe you mentioned a similar thing with language having to do with the Bell Witch, where she was looked upon like, did you mention that?
Because she talked. Yeah, I did. Because she talked weird. Which, I mean, if they, Lord knows what the accents were back then, but if she was in North Carolina and moved to Tennessee, it wouldn't be much different. But I think they were saying she didn't use the right words. So maybe they thought she wasn't educated or something. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. And I think I have read or heard somewhere that that was like one of the things that could get you designated as a witch, using weird language. And like if you were just kind of the weird family and then you also talked weird, because that was one of the things I remember there. Yeah. Pointing out with the story of Jeff is this family was already kind of the weird family on the island. So this was just kind of like already it leaning into it almost in a certain way. But the other thing I remember that was super interesting that maybe we can talk about some of the fae elements is that the Island of Man had a big fae like folklore present way before Jeff. And there was, if I remember right, cairn circles and maybe burial mounds or something along those lines in the area of where this all took place. So there definitely had like a history of weird stuff there. There was one story, I can't remember what it was exactly now, but it had something to do with a drunk who got followed by a ghost for like a couple miles, and the ghost was singing hymns to him and trying to convince him to live a better life. And it happened in that same area. And I love that. That's beautiful. Like,
it's like the same energy, buddy. I'm trying to save you.
Yeah. Come on. Like, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's something to that place. Like, you know, the island being so secluded and like them kind of sticking out. I love those little kind of weird markers.
Yeah.
And if they're putting out that same energy, and maybe that energy, them and the bells, yeah, hit them and the bells, that's what drew the entities in the first place.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
The entities just exploited it in different ways. And as I was talking to Tanya before you came on, Todd, another big difference, but yet makes it the same. That time in America would have been very Puritan, and she would have gotten the most response being evil and demonic. Whereas on the Isle of Man, they believe in that shit. They believe in fairies. A talking mongoose is top tier. Yes, bring it on.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
They believe that in their heart already. So they're going to represent what's going to get them the most reaction.
Absolutely. Cultural reflection is 100% a part of it. And that's a really good point. Like even more mainstream religions in those areas incorporate fae elements as if you don't have it, they don't want it. Like, it's just kind of needs to be there.
Yeah.
And it really, that's a really stark, actually, like, I didn't think about that until you just said that. It really does represent the time periods very well. Like, the Bell Witch is kind of like a perfect cultural reflection of that time in Tennessee, I'd imagine. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not a historian.
Very Puritan. You know, if you even read a book, you were probably a witch.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's, I mean, and that's the thing, you know, if you're the lady who has a bigger vocabulary, and all she has to do is give a left-handed compliment to a man in charge at that time, and she's a witch.
Right.
Yeah. You know.
But the weird thing is, I don't know, and I would like to, I guess we would have to investigate way more, but I don't know what tied these two together as far as the Bell Witch goes. Why did they just all of a sudden think Kate Batts was that?
I mean, I think that was more of a political thing, it sounds to me.
And they just didn't like each other.
And here's another thing. What if they really were just long-term poisoning the dad, and they needed to shift it somewhere so they wouldn't get blamed at the end? If you want to take all the woo-woo out of Bell Witch, take it all away, the trickster, the fae, all of it. It very well could have been a family trying to kill off a really bad dude. Maybe the dad was the fucking monster.
Right.
And they needed to have something to blame for when he eventually died.
Yeah, that's
you know, I'm no Scooby-Doo. But that's the mundane. That there's your mundane, you know, skeptical side of it. So, that's when you got to ask yourself, what do you believe? Do you believe there was an entity there? If you do, now I can't make it a demon or a witch or a sign religion, because that's not who I am. So I'm going to say it's fae trickster. Because they are energy feeders, whatever label you put on them. It's just like when they take you through the fairy ring or whatever, and you're gone, they're feeding on your energy that whole time. They're not like killing you. They're not hurting you because you're their cash pig feeder thing.
I definitely see it more as like a symbiotic relationship like that. I guess you could call it fence sitting, but I like to leave room for both. Like, it could have been 100% that person was poisoned by arsenic over a long term for doing some really shitty stuff. But that could totally, that energy mixed with applying the mythology of a witch and stuff could definitely trigger some real events. I mean, if we want to talk about hoaxings, I definitely fall in the camp of there's plenty of hoaxes, but the hoaxes are part of the real magic. One of my favorite people I've learned about over this last year is this dude, Doc Shields. Do you all know who Doc Shields is?
Mm-mm.
Okay, I know the name,
and as soon as you start talking, it'll
click. You'll probably, so AP Strange is the guy that turned me on to this, and he loves the Loch Ness Monster. And Doc Shields is one of the lesser known people in the Loch Ness story. He was a surrealist artist. He was a self-proclaimed magician and a upfront about it hoaxer, and he would take these beautiful pictures.
Cole sent me his file. That's where I heard the name. Okay.
Absolutely.
When we were gonna do Nessie.
Totally.
Okay, go on. I'm sorry.
He would do these beautiful pictures. He has these other amazing pictures of the Loch Ness Monster that very well could have been some of his hoax pictures, but his whole idea was hoaxing is the part of it. You have to play with this phenomenon to get them to play back. And you have to kind of discredit yourself to make yourself creditable to them. And it's all about holding that dichotomy that the paranormal kind of seems to promote, like this paradoxical, like it's real and it's not real at the same time. And his whole idea was to play with that in a creative and fun way. And he swears every time he had real encounters with corporeal lake monsters or sea monsters, because he hoaxed it and would play, go into it with that playful. And, you know, I love like that attitude. Like, yeah. And
he was manifesting his sea monster dreams.
Totally. So, I mean, the Bell Witch is a much more dark case of that, being that there may have been some real life, poisoning going on. But I think that any kind of intentional act like that, it combined with other other elements, could really bring about some weird stuff.
Well, right, another exactly. thing, I mean, another way to look at it, maybe the entity gave the mom the power to do, you know, the idea, the power, because back then you had no recourse. If your husband was a monster, you had no recourse besides offing him in some way. And at that time, had she offed him openly, they would have burned her at the stake.
Right. Absolutely. Or hung her or hung something. Her. Yeah.
They would have
hung
her.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, wives had no power.
Nope.
I don't know. There's a lot of ways you can go with that. And then, so in that way, that makes the Bell Witch more of a companion than it seemed in the beginning.
Right, to the wife and to the old,
the wife and the daughter.
Sport. Yeah.
You know, the pinching and the whatever could have been like, hey, wake up. Don't, you know, your dad's a bad guy. Because if that was happening, he was grooming her, you know.
Well, she seemed to want to get her boyfriend. She seemed to want to get Betsy's boyfriend away from her as well. So maybe she just didn't, not that she didn't like men. Like,
well,
she,
okay, so but here's
maybe
a
she
real
thought
fact.
They were both bad.
She was a young child being abused, and anybody that she would have been attracted to would have been just like her abuser.
Lord, so yeah, that's true.
The entity was actually trying to help her. Like, that's a real psychological fact.
Oh, yeah, I know.
So, I mean, if you look at it from that perspective, maybe the entity was trying to help her. This guy's just as much of a D-bag as your dad, lady.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know,
we don't want to have to fucking poison two people. Come on. You know, I mean, girls are drawn to guys that remind them of their daddies. That's a real flipping thing. Look at my first husband and be like, oh, hell, God damn it.
As far as like the fae connections with both of these, you know, I always loved the offering side that Jeff had. Like, you know, the family made offerings to him, and if I remember right, he would also make offerings to the family at times. Like, he would, was it rabbits that he would present to them
rabbits
at times,
chickens, and it was chickens? When they were really hard on their luck, and sometimes that was the only meat they had.
And they would sell it, right? Like, they would sell it, like, and like, yeah.
He really helped them, and that family never disparaged him.
Yeah.
Never once. And they never made any money off of him. They never profited from the story. As a matter of fact, it harmed them in ways, having people come out there and having it become a tabloid thing. And all because they just kind of wanted to know what Jeff was, because he never gave them a hard story. So they would bring people in, and then the news caught wind of it. And he always tried to help them, like, for any story. And that was the thing, like, they would give him everything, you know, whatever they could. And even if it was a song, and he would sing them songs, and he would comfort them when they were sad. And, you know, it was a very good relationship from what everything that I've read. That family never had a bad word to say about him.
Right.
Not one.
Well, and that's what she did to the mom. That's what the Bell Witch did. She would sing to her when she was sick and stuff like that. So she was nice as far as that goes, but it seems like she was not nice to anybody else. I mean, she was trickstery with a witch hunter and such as that, but I did find a thing that she.
Okay, but she's probably pissed off. Like, she's just throwing the Bible verses at him at that point. Here you go, right, Mother exactly. Trucker. I ain't got nothing to do with your damn ass religion.
Did she have like a sense of humor like Jeff did? Like, was she quippy or like a little bit like, was she known
Any
to be
snark?
Have that same? Yeah, that's snark. That's a good word.
She
for
was
it.
Snarky as far as he went. Yeah, as far as that guy goes, because she wanted to scare him and the people that were with him. Like, they were a traveling party that had came with Andrew Jackson from the town, because I don't know how it's like now, but or like then, but now it's a teeny weeny town in the middle of nowhere. So they came from maybe say Nashville or something, and him and all his cohorts she was scaring and harassing. So yeah, she probably did have a sense of humor as far as that goes.
It sounded like she actually enjoyed it.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I think those are the ones she did the I Am Legion thing.
Yeah.
And then, okay, that reminds me of Jeff a lot. The whole I Am Legion, you'd be so terrified of me if you could actually woo-woo. Yeah. And I mean, that part, that reminds me a lot of Jeff, because he would do that when he got irate with people. And normally, it was only towards the investigators, the people that were doubting him.
Right.
Those are the little touches that make me really think there is something else going on, because there are the things you can see it so consistent in a lot of other things, like biblical verses, like biblical angels that show up and say, "Do not fear me," because they're like giant swirling balls of like fire and eyeballs, or like or God or Yahweh himself that you can't see or else you would explode or whatever the Old Testament says if you ever like laid eyes on the actual creator. So I like those consistencies through paranormal and religious things, because I feel like they're all grasping at explaining the unknown, and those things lend a little validity for it in one way or the other, I guess.
They're always consistent in their threats, but they never follow through.
I did find one thing that she said. It's in the earlier accounts, the spirit itself provides an origin stating, and she said this, "I am a spirit. I was once very happy, but I've been disturbed and made unhappy. I am a spirit of a person who was buried in the woods nearby, and the grave was disturbed. My bones disinterred and scattered, and one of my teeth was lost under this house. I am here looking for that tooth." It said, of course, this can't be verified. However, a number of Indian burial mounds could be found in the region. But it seems like people are quick to blame Indian burial mounds for stuff. But another time she did say she was a spirit from everywhere, heaven and hell, the earth. She was the air, the houses, any place at any time, and have been created millions of years.
I like that one.
Yeah. And that was kind of like I Am Legion almost, because she's saying I'm, you know, everything.
And I love that she says I am the air, because and spirit in the same, because if I just looked this up recently for a whole other thing, but spirit originally meant like the animating breath that goes into, like, from a religious point of view, like the Holy Spirit. It's the animated breath that goes into you, the animated air that brings things to life. And like, that's all. I just love those little things. And I also love that both of them go on these like diatribes. They're just like, you know what, I'm gonna tell you myself right now for a minute.
This is who I am, if you want to know.
You want to know who I am, and again, it's like that whole, you don't know who you're dealing with.
Well,
you know,
and it's
right,
like,
exactly.
And it's like they're going for whatever's going to grab the most attention from whoever they're interacting with. And like, you know, one of the things I've kicked around with our mutual friend Vuk before is that the biggest offering we can make for the other or the fae or however you want to look at that is our attention. And like these anomalous encounters are just kind of vying for us, for our attention, so they're going to play with whatever we respond the most to. It's kind of like these horrible algorithms in social media, if you want to look at them that way. Like they're just showing you what they think is going to respond the best, you're going to interact with the most. So
exactly
the other kind of uses that same idea. But yeah,
the minute they know that you can hear them and that you're going to interact with them, they won't shut up. Right. And that's, right. I mean, that's how spirit works. It's, I mean, they yeah. want to interact, especially the ones I explain as non-corporeal entities. They're not demons, but they're not human, and they didn't have a human origin. They want to interact. It's how they feel. Right. And I don't right. know all the details because I don't know. I'm not in spirit. I'm not there yet. I have my theories just on what I've experienced and heard and read, and how all of the stories overlap in certain areas, and people that are like me, their experiences overlap in these same areas. And
yeah.
they feed off our energy, whether that's the heat or the electricity, the pheromones,
right,
whatever it is.
Right.
There's something we have that is like crap to them. And if they can interact and get us, that's why so many really scary sightings are just to get your fear. They just want yeah. to eat your fear. And if they can't scare you, then that's when they start getting snarky, and maybe they can get some joy and laughter, because that's energy too.
Totally. Right.
And I really believe, like with Jeff and Bellwitch, that they are kind of the same entity, and it is more a matter of culture reflection, as you said yeah. earlier, Todd. I really believe that, and like that's just my opinion on all of it. And
I love it.
I really actually kind of believe the family was poisoning their dad too.
Yeah,
I think that's great.
I just really do.
Can I throw? So I love that what you just said, and I like to play with a lot of these ideas, and like I like to think about things as far as like the interaction that they have, like the idea of them feeding off our fear. And I have two things I'd love to throw out there just to see what y'all think that okay. Vaguely relate mm-hmm. to what we're talking about. But okay, so
at this
I
point,
recently
doesn't matter.
So these two are kind of connected. A while ago, I was listening to Jordan from Campfire Tales. It was one of their uh-huh. episodes, and they were talking about the same thing, the idea of entities feeding off our fear. And whatever it was they were explaining, it was like a really wild out there case that was like super like psychedelic imagery and just really weird. And it kind of popped into my head, like, what if they don't really feed off our fear, but they have a creative experience or a psychedelic experience almost? So let's say psychedelic for ease at this point. So let's say they have a psychedelic experience off our fear. And so they literally use us as a shamanic experience to one kind of, it would explain somewhat of the different types of experiences and interactions people have, because some of these beings that are going to have this experience are just starting out, and they're kind of like college kids taking mushrooms for the first time, and they don't know what the hell they're doing. So they're going to have this very unstructured, high strangeness, wild experience, where right. the people that are doing it for more, or the entities that are doing it for more of a shamanic, more self revelatory experience, they're going to have a more structured long-form contact experience where they're going to like form relationships with these people that they're having this symbiotic psychedelic yeah. experience off of, right? So that was a fun idea I just kind of had, that, and they're not sucking our fear, they're just tripping balls off our fear, right? Like that is just kind of like to put it really
I love
simply
it, because I say it all the time, it's like they're it's irresistible to them.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Interaction.
So I had that idea. And then the other day I was listening to this artist that has this really awesome podcast. He goes by the name Ungoogleable Michelangelo. And he has a podcast that's called Self-Portraits as Other People. And he was relaying a story of when he did DMT, and he had an interaction with a mantis being in the DMT world. And he
well,
is
that
this,
would be scary.
Yeah, right. And it was this dude, he was a psychonaut in all the words. He's had a million of these experiences. He had a relationship with this mantis being as much as you could, and like felt comfortable at this point to ask him, like, why do you show up here? What do you care about me for? Like, why? Like, I know what I'm coming here for, but why are you here? And I'm going to butcher this, but to do my best, the mantis says, because creativity and art is uniquely human. Nothing else in the cosmos can create the way that humans create. And we use you as our artistic extension. Now go back to the world and create. And this guy, you know, he's a visionary artist. That's this whole shtick is going into other realms and bringing back imagery from other realms, right? And I thought about wow. that applied to the paranormal. And another thing I heard an experiencer say, where they said, in their life of experiences, it's one of these people that have had alien interactions their whole lives. They've never seen artwork in any of the spaces that the other has taken them. And I was like, I can't think of any account of high strangeness where you go somewhere and see artwork from the other. What if they right. can't make artwork? What if they literally can't do it and they have to use us? And all of these interactions are them creating things, whether it's scary things or funny things, or, you know, they just, they need us for that imaginal expression. And like, again, these are just fun ideas that I like to not be super yeah. committed to, but like, I like that they
oh,
kind
I'll be
of...
chewing on this for a couple of days. You'll be hearing from me in a couple of days. Hey, Todd.
Please. No, I love it. Cause I love taking these things that that kind of reframe it in a somewhat more positive, or at least if not positive, something that you can do a little bit more with. Because it's right. me, you can take that and apply that to your life. And if you can experience your life a little bit more creative, with a little bit more creativity, live in the imagination, you're going to be more open to not only the other in the paranormal sense, but the other as far as like your neighbors and like people that are different than you. And like, if this doesn't teach us that, then what's the point? Like, if this doesn't right. teach you how to just be a better person in general, then maybe that's just me getting older. But I feel like the more I get older, I just like, I don't want things that aren't like constructing a more positive worldview, if that makes sense.
Right. No, that's great. I really like that.
We can't change the whole ass world. We can't, but we exactly. can change our corner of it.
Yeah.
And we can surround ourselves with the people that have the same ideologies that we do and that radiate the same. Because guess what? I'm all about, like, you know, we need love and compassion in this world. Mm-hmm. And the only way we can do it is by being it, you know, and I right. hate that kitschy saying, absolutely. Be the change. I hate it.
No, but it's
at the same time, like, I agree 100%. I mean, right. we are the only ones. It's the same thing I say about being a practicing witch. Even if you take the woo woo aside mm-hmm. and take all that out of it, it's a damn good self-help tool because you do a lot yeah. of introspection.
Exactly.
You know, it isn't about worshiping some mystical deity. It's not a religion. The craft is not a religion. It is about controlling your own reality and taking your own power.
Exactly. You know?
Right.
And
right.
what is it fucking great about that?
Yeah.
You know? So that's what I say. I said, take the woo-woo out of it. You don't believe in the woo-woo side? That's cool. I mean, I'm an animist. I believe everything has a spirit. So I am very woo-woo about a lot of things.
I'm with you. Good. You know, we're all in the same boat there.
Yeah. You know, I believe everything has a spirit, every single thing. And I believe absolutely. That with all my heart. But I also say, like I say, with witchcraft, it's more about focusing your intent, taking control mm-hmm. of your reality, because reality isn't what we think it is, my friends. We maybe know 8 to 10% of how our yeah. universe actually works.
Right.
And no, I agree.
You know, there's so much more. If we don't, another thing, like you said, if we haven't learned anything from everything that we research and everything that we love to talk about and everything that we create as writers, as musicians, as artists, we've learned, oh my God, my brain just fucking went completely glitched.
It happens to me like 3 times an episode of anybody I'm talking to. So don't feel bad.
And I was on such a good roll. Like,
it was really good.
It was so
it's
going to
come back.
I was so proud of myself.
No, but you're absolutely right.
We really
right.
learned that the universe isn't what we think it is. There's more to it. That's yes. where I was going.
No, absolutely. And I think that, like, remembering that Joshua Cutchin has one of my favorite quotes about this that I use all the time, and that's that re-enchanting the world is not about making the mundane magical. It's about remembering that the mundane is magical. And like, there's so much magic in this world, and like, I mean, everywhere. I feel it everywhere. Like, everywhere. And like, having kids is so helpful to remember that, like, seeing the world through like a 2-year-old or a 5-year-old's eyes and those little light bulbs coming off. And like, my 2-year-old, she's in the with every time she sees like Santa aww. Or Christmas lights and just like these gasps and just
told
like
that can exist. It exactly. hasn't been imprinted on. And here's another way I raise my kids, and they thank me for it because they're all very like me. I never told them. I let them make up their own minds about their reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I never said no. That's because, okay, I saw things as a kid and they were real, But I was told I had imaginary friends. I had a great imagination. I had this, my that. I could read by the age of three. So I'm just making stuff up because I'm so creative or however, whatever the adult said. I never did that to my kids. I treated their imaginary friends as real things because I didn't know they very well could have been, you know?
Right.
That's, you can't take your children's magic away. There's magic everywhere.
Exactly. No, that's beautiful. And I agree too. I mean, I to this day, the only paranormal stories I have are in relation to my kids. And there's an idea that this guy, Eric Wargo, put out there that I really love. And I don't agree with everything that he puts out there. He's got some really interesting ideas, but he has this one where the magic or what makes these things happen, whether it's synchronicities or anomalous events or all these, it's the sharing of them. He is a big believer in retro causality, that things that we do in the present solidify what happens in the past and things that happen in the future, all impact. That's not linear. It's all happening at the same time. And that when we have those weird experiences and we share them with friends, family, community, that is the point. And that is where the magic actually lives. And it is that, that's the juice. And I love that because it really, it's one of those things where, like, when you find those people where you can share your silly synchronicities or your dumb dreams with, you feel like such a more fulfilled person. Like, you find yourself via community a lot of the times. And I think with sometimes this type of stuff somehow can be isolating, and it shouldn't be.
You know, I mean, I live in Florida, and all I'm gonna say is, like, it's very hard sometimes to find people that actually understand. Like, it's funny because, like, my coworkers are so, you know, they're so supportive and they get, like, what I do, and they're like my biggest hype girls and all of that, you know. And but the minute I say, oh, I'm a podcaster, oh yeah, what do you talk about? And I'm like, okay, here we go.
Absolutely.
You want your cards read?
I love it.
Although I did accidentally channel somebody's grandmother at work, a guest I was serving, and I did gain a new pod group fan through that. But it was a little old Korean woman, and this lady was crying, and I could see her in my head and she was talking, but I couldn't, all I'm hearing are sounds because she's fucking speaking Korean, right? So I just look at this lady, I'm like, and I'm trying to think, I'm like, your grandmother is standing, like, she's tapping. I don't know what that means, and I don't know what she's saying. And this lady even started crying harder. Oh my God, that's how she stands. And
that's, like, amazing.
So, you know, I know that this stuff is real. And that's why I do this. That's why I podcast. That's why I talk about it. Because guess what? There's hoaxers out there, but the hoaxes are just as fucking important as the real encounters.
Right.
For very, very different reasons. And that's why I started Skeptics. We started it talking, remember, Tanya? Talking about the shit that pissed us off, which basically became a let's bash the Warrens fest in Ancient Aliens. Yeah.
rightfully so.
Oh, I fucking hate the Warrens. I'll bash them again. Don't make me do it.
So, just you said that was the second time when you lost your pen earlier, you said thank you, grandma, when it kind of aported back, right? Did it?
My grandma's always with me. She was my mother. My biological mom passed away when I was a year and a half. I died sitting on the bed, or she died when I was sitting on the bed next to her. Again, I could read by the age of three. I don't know. I always saw my mom. She was always with me. My grandma passed 10 years ago now, 15 years ago now. She's always been with me. I hear her. I have spoons fly. Again, I've worked in the same place for about 6 years. In the last 2 years, she has sent three psychics in because I live my life very blocked off. If I'm at work, I don't want to channel somebody's grandma. Mm-hmm. That was a random moment. She caught me off balance that day. I've had to learn, because I've lived with this my whole life, I've had to learn to keep myself extremely blocked. Okay, well, that carries over into my home life. Unless I meditate and want to channel, like when I'm reading cards or doing any sort of ritual or whatever that I do, I keep myself blocked off. It's just quieter. I also have a haunted doll. When he wants something done, he speaks to my daughter. when I put him up on the shelf where he couldn't see the TV, my daughter came flying into my room. What'd you do to Johnny? Because he's in her bedroom going, Marley, Marley, hey, Marley. Like, yeah. So like, but once you live with me for a little while, like my daughter, like anybody who spends any significant amount of time with me actually loses any disbelief they have for the things that I do say or see. So it's a fun life. But my grandma,
I love that.
Three different psychics into the diner. And the last one was just recently. And I was going through this time after my aunt, who was my bonus mom, died this past January. And I want to get out of Florida. I'm making an active plan to leave this hate state. And I was just so sad. And I was in the big sad, like I'm just crawling out of it now. This happened in January. My aunt passing happened in January. Yeah. She looked just like my grandma. She was my grandma's oldest daughter. Her and I were best friends. And we used to talk about how grandma, when I lived with her, we could hear grandma. I would think my aunt was home and I would go out in the living room and nobody was there. Well, it was my grandma. They had the same voice. Whoa. My cousin, who I call my sister, has the same voice. They all have the same face. Everybody in my family is blonde hair and blue eyed except me. They're all blonde hair, blue eyed.
Me too.
Right. And they're all like Amazon, beautiful shit, brick house women. And I'm tiny little brown hair, brown eyed Trina. But I'm so close with all of them. They're my siblings. I was raised with them. There was just us four. And then my grandma and my aunt. So when my aunt passed, she's come to visit me once, but she's busy. There's some things going on. And my aunt was shiny. She was a pure ball of light. She's who I inherited, Johnny, the haunted dolphin. My grandma has been here with me. Well, the last psychic grabbed my arm and she says, do you know somebody? And she was just in there eating. I'm walking past her. She wasn't even at my table. She grabs my arm randomly. I'm just blah, 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 minding my own business. You know somebody named Marjorie Jane? I'm like, fuck. Ugh. It's my grandma. She wants you to know that she's proud of you. She loves you. And are you planning some kind of trip? Because it's what you need to do and it's going to go great.
I got goosebumps.
But okay. See, it doesn't freak me out because I live in it. And, you know, she sent somebody in when I lost my moonstones. This lady found my moonstones. It was crazy. Anyways, my grandma speaks to me.
Well, I asked because that was the second time you said grandma. And last night, so my Nana was like one of the most important people in my lives. Like I had great parents growing up and was very lucky to still have both my parents, having, knock on wood, experienced any of the big deaths besides my Nana, which happened at that like 14, like freshman year in high school, like big, like my first big, like, oh, fuck you, God. Like, you know, that whole experience type deal, like very changed everything. And I think about my Nana a lot because she was like one of the first people to tell me, I guess, like paranormal stories. She was a pediatric nurse and she would tell me stories about the kids that would be, you know, not long for this world. And they would say something like, I got this shiny red bike at the end of the bed that I'm going to ride home tomorrow. And I can't wait to ride the shiny red bike. And she'd be like, yeah, aww, that's a beautiful bike. And then they wouldn't be there the next day. She would tell us these stories. She was very old school Catholic, believed that her parents were guardian angels that lived in her house, all of that. Anyway, I think about her pretty often. But last night, before we going through a bunch of stuff with like the house and some other family private stuff, and it was kind of a rough night, and I was going to bed, and out of nowhere I started thinking about my Nana and just started like bawling, like just started crying. Aww. So hard. And then like I woke up the next day, my kid came down and he was like, Dad, who's Nana? And I was like, because he has my mom's Nana to him. And I was like, well, you mean my mom? And he was like, no, who's the other Nana? And I'm like, you mean, what do you mean? And like, that was it. That was kind of the whole conversation. Yeah, but she totally came. Like, I feel like so hard. Like, and it's just so funny because I hadn't really, I haven't shared that with anybody because it just happened so recently. Like, I wasn't planning on sharing it tonight, but the fact that you brought up grandma's visiting twice, and so my kid is really into science stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And he was listening to a science podcast and they're explaining about how grandmas are a human construct, like in the biological world, that's not really a thing. Like there's not a mom of a mom that comes and hangs out with the mom's kids, you know, like grandkids exist, but it's not like a social structure that's utilized like we utilize it. Like we are one of the only species that's known to do that. And that's like super interesting to me that there's so many connections to people's grandparents and like that. It's something that's so, again, just seems to be uniquely human or something. I don't know. It was just weird that all of those things kind of happened today. Weird little synchronicities.
Grandmas, you get and I can say this being a grandmother now, and I love all four of my grandchildren, but grandmas always have one that they're so, you know. And my grandma, even in the midst of her dementia, I'll tell you, I haven't seen her in 2 years at the end, and I thought for sure she wouldn't recognize me because she was really bad. And I walked in that room and she opened her eyes and she was like, "Hey, brat." That's what she always called me, brat. Like, so she knew me. And to this day, like, if I do hear her, that's what I hear first is, "Hey, brat," you know. But grandmas always have their one. They have their one. I have my Noah. I hope in the future none of my grandkids listen to this episode. But I have my Noah. My daughter was very young when she had him, and I did a lot of the raising of him. He's 14 now, and grandma and him are like this.
Yep.
When he wants to get away, he comes, my office turns into his bedroom.
That's perfect.
You know, his, you know, and not that there's any ever issues, except for he's got siblings that drive him insane. And sometimes he just wants to come hang at grandma's.
That's big enough issues.
Right. Hey, you know.
You just saying that made me miss having a grandma's house to go to and hide away in. I'll tell you, there's nowhere to hide anymore.
No, that's what I said when my aunt, I'm like, you know, it's weird. You get to this point in your life, you're like, well, who's going to hug me and make me piccata now? You know, like, you know, it's rough sometimes. But at the same time, like, you create your own beautiful world. You're making it. You know, you're paying it forward. You're creating what your grandparents created. You're creating with your tribe and everybody creates their own community and their own family, whether they be furred or feathered or human. You know, you create your own reality. So it's up to you to fill it with the things that make your soul happy. You know,
I love that. I love this is where our conversation on the bell.
This has been amazing, though. And Tanya, I don't even know what we're going to call it at this point.
I know. Well, it kind of went where it needed to go. So,
yeah. And I actually have to get going. So let's get our final hypothesis out of the way. I already said mine. I think they're the same species of entity, just two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
Trina, what do you think?
Trina, I'll go with that. I like it. I think they're interacting with something really similar. And I think it's definitely, it seems to be a co-created type situation in both instances to me.
Yep.
Tanya?
I think so too. I had some stuff I was going to read, but it's about the Fae and such that had more to do with the Bell Witch than Jeff, but I think they are definitely. She is the, I know I'm not pronouncing this right because it's a Gaelic word and God only knows how they spelled shit, but but the Seely.
I think Seely's good.
And Unseely, and I think Jeff was a Seely, which is a good fae, or a nicer blessing type fae, and the Unseely was more of a mischief, or just that annoying, hateful kind of spirit type thing. And so I think that he's a Seely and she's an Unseely, and they both kind of have the same thing going on. It's just that he was more of a blessing type and she was more of an aggravation type. Right. And so, and
you're adding culture reflection.
Yes, exactly. And that's why the witch stuff came about. Now I do kind of think, and I am going to look more into this and let y'all know, but I do kind of think that the poisoning of him was a mortal thing. I think that he got portaled or got poisoned by humans, and she, whether she was there to help or whether she whispered in their ears about how to do it. Yeah. I think
there were some long beneficial conversations that we can't find any words to.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. But were they fae? I think so. I think both of them were.
That. Yeah, I agree. I love it.
Yeah.
And I love the fae just because they can be just about anything. And I mean, think about it. There's good and bad fae. There's good and bad angels. Okay, I'm going to go right back into my, all of it. But
we'll have to have you back to talk about good and bad angels.
That's a whole other episode.
I'm in.
Okay.
Anytime. No, this was, yeah, anytime. This was so much fun.
Yes, cool, it was.
Todd, I'll be asking you to come back on again. I am actually taking you at your word. I have had the best time tonight, y'all.
This
was great. I mean, awesome. And I was joking that I didn't even care about good content at this point, but I think we got some really great content.
Oh, yeah, I do too. So,
it was a really fun conversation.
It was. I loved it.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to all of our digressions and stories and theories and hypotheses. Tanya, tell the folks where they can find Spooks, Creeps, and Assorted Devilry.
We are on all of the socials. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, which, like I said, I'm going to be there until I watch it burn down. So we're on all of those. We're on most of the podcast platforms. We're on most of those. We have artwork t-shirts and all of that on Redbubble, and some stuff on Big Cartel, which is,
we're
going to
get Todd's sweet artwork on a t-shirt.
Yes. Well, his stuff is on the t-shirt. Their stuff is already on there. Oh. I know, they have bucket hats. So,
I love it.
Tell the nice folks where they can find your stuff and everything that you do.
It's the easiest thing is createmagicstudios.com. That'll lead you to the Patreon, the podcast. Instagram is at ToddDE85, and that's where I post the daily artwork. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Awesome.
Yeah, because your website has a what are they called? Linktree, and it has all your stuff in it. Yeah. We have a Linktree also. So those are good things.
They are. It makes it nice and easy.
Yes,
right,
it
to
does.
Get to everywhere. And I don't know. I don't do none of it. Like, I'm so tech dumb. It's ridiculous. Again, I handwrite everything still. That's just who I am as a person.
So, I love it. That's awesome.
I'm going to sign off, guys. Thank you so, so much. Oh, I guess you should probably say goodbye, huh?
This was great. Bye, everybody.
Yes, bye.
I really
have
do
a great
appreciate
night,
it again, Todd. Thank you.
Thank you for having
me.
I'll talk to
you
all soon.
Holy cow. It is so dope. I love it so, so much.
Thank you.